this whole season, the whole 2017-2018 season, there's a new thing happening for Sully Chamber Ensemble. You remain at Ruth Taylor Concert Hall on Trinity University's campus, which is a great space, but you're also in the new space at Jazz Texas for your Monday night shows this year. So tell me about how you decided to go there.
Well, you know, we know Brent Watkins, Doc Watkins. He's a good friend, and when he was opening the club, I think he always wanted to have the club be a music venue more than just a jazz venue, and you can see it on his concerts that he's presenting there. And he loves Sully, and we love him, and we approached him and said, you know, can we play here this May and see how it works out for, you know, both parties? So we performed our last concert there last season. And the venue is fantastic, and turnout was great, and everybody really enjoyed the sound because it's so intimate, you're so close. And so we talked to him and decided we'll present our season there, basically. You know, that'll be our Monday night venue for this year. And we had an incredible conversation with the Tobin Center. And they've been so good to us for 3 years, basically. But we had to look at some numbers and things because the night we can play at the Tobin was always kind of a difficult night on Mondays, you know, unless you're a big show. So we're still part of the family at the Tobin as far as, you know, whenever we want to or we can perform there. They are going to welcome us with open arms, as we hoped. But we had the conversation and decided to sort of go back to what Sully is known for, you know, performing in a little bit smaller, more sort of eclectic spaces this season. And so Jazz Texas was a perfect fit for us. And I hope people will come and hear us there because it is a great venue.
And it's great because you get to have drinks or things like that, you know, while you're listening to the music.
That's absolutely true. Yeah, you can come in, and it's kind of a relaxed atmosphere, and we have drinks available. Of course, I always say, you know, drinks make the music sound better.
So on the first program this year, though, we've got some pieces by some composers that, you know, I'm not familiar with, including opening with a piece called Verge, Sebastian Currier. Tell me about it.
Verge is a fantastic piece, and Stephanie brought this piece up many times, probably the past three seasons, and every time we put it on the program, we had to cancel it and replace it with something else because, you know, our repertoire really depends on some of the activities we do outside of San Antonio because, you know, we have residencies and other concerts in different towns around the country. So sometimes we have to think about a season sort of as a whole package, you know, how many pieces we can fit in. So Verge always just got cut, you know, it's just one of those pieces. Finally, we have Verge on the program. It's a nine-movement work that's, you know, shorter movements. And it is sort of based on a Schumann piece. And it's basically sort of like, he sort of uses this almost too little or almost too loud. And in the Schumann piece, that was one of the things, you know, almost too serious, you know. And so he sort of took that and went with juxtaposing like almost too light, almost too dark. And it's a very interesting thing because, you know, one can cross the line pretty easily with, you know, for example, almost too romantic could be, you know, you could just go crazy romantic
schmaltz it
up too much and all that. So it's an interesting concept for a performer because, you know, it already puts sort of a little bit of a limit for you. You know, it is almost too dark, but it's not too dark. So you have to think about where those limits are and how far you want to go with what he's trying to achieve. So it's a fantastic piece technically and obviously expressively because of all these titles. And so it's a trio for clarinet, violin and piano, sorry. And so we just rehearsed it actually 10 minutes ago before I came to the studio. And it's going well. It's going to be really fun.
I got to say, as a side, you know, that you're playing at a jazz club. Whenever somebody's laying out, so to speak, here. Yeah. So David would be laying out in this.
Right, place. David's so laying out, exactly. Well, I get to sit out the next trio, which is Daniel Schneider's trio. And it's that is really based on jazz because he's a saxophone player, lives in New York City. And he's an incredibly creative guy, and he's just one of those guys who's able to put those jazz idioms in, you know, on a piece of paper, basically, that a classical musician can basically access. Mm-hmm. You know, it is always very difficult for geeks like us to sort of get into the jazz realm because we don't improvise often. I mean, there are some of us who are really great, of course. You know, there are a lot of groups and soloists that can do that. But in general, I think, you know, classically trained musicians have a harder time with improvisational prowess. So he's one of those guys who just can translate it somehow onto a piece of paper so that, you know, we can sort of achieve that same feeling. And it's a great combination, cello, clarinet, and piano. You know, and it's called a what is it called again? We can cut this, right?
Yeah.
All right. It's called A Friday Night in August. And I actually contacted him through an email, and I said, well, you know, the piece is amazing. We love it. We're performing it. But what is it about, you know? Because there's no actual program notes anywhere about the piece. And I haven't heard back from him yet. So, you know, we might have a program note basically missing about this piece, and we might find out later and we'll post it. But I guess the piece really speaks for itself. I mean, it's just exploring the jazz idioms between a clarinet and cello. You know, the cello acts like sometimes the primary voice and sometimes like the baritone sax or something, and sometimes goes back to the double bass kind of role, and piano obviously is always present. And clarinet kind of goes between jazzy clarinet to soprano sax kind of feel. And it's just a really beautifully written piece. So we thought it would be perfect for our first official sort of concert of 2017-18 at Jazz Texas.
So it's going to have kind of the sound and feel of jazz improvisation, even though it's written out. It's through composed.
Right. Yeah. So it's exciting.
Cool. And the third piece up here is?
Well, the third piece, third big piece is by George Santakis. And this is so funny to say this. I hope he doesn't hear this, but it's kind of an oldie. You know, it's from 1995.
Whoa.
Yeah. It's so funny because we were talking about that the other day to a board member of ours, and we were saying, wow, you know, it's really funny how we sort of moved from the Second Viennese School and Shostakovich and, you know, all of that to basically music that is written after 2000, after the turn of the millennium. And it's really funny.
You mean with your programming?
With our programming, yeah. Right. So we, you know, when we go beyond that, like in the 90s or something, or I mean 80s for crying, or 70s, it just feels like, wow, this is old, you know. And it's not at all, of course. It's very progressive and incredible music coming from that era. But we've sort of moved into the 2000s so completely that when we cross that line, like this piece in 1995, it feels like it's old, but it really is a fantastic piece, and it gets performed a lot, and it's based on the solar eclipse in 1995, and he creates this. You know, he has a very eclectic style. I mean, he could channel basically any of the sort of classical idioms that we can think of, you know, modernism, the impressionism, and, you know, post-romantic. And he can turn on a dime, you know. So the piece really is put together in such a way that it really sort of visits all these sort of idioms, really, the modern classical idioms. And so one movement is ultra-romantic, almost to a point where it sounds like Mahler-esque. And then next it turns into this crazy Greek dance. It's like almost like a sun ritual kind of celebration kind of thing, where four musicians are basically chasing each other at this very fast tempo. And you hear the melody that he's creating, and it's almost like an echo effect because everybody's accenting and playing the same notes at a different time to create that sort of depth. Mm-hmm. At times it sounds like you're in an echo chamber, and other times it sounds like it's just a crazy Greek band, you know, just gone nuts, too much ouzo, you know. And then he turns around and all of a sudden it becomes incredibly impressionistic. So it's an amazing piece to perform, and it's a pretty large scale. You know, it's about 25 minutes or so. So that'll be the bulk of the second half.
Let me ask you something about older music, so to speak.
Yeah,
you
know, older. That's older. So funny.
Meaning from the, you know, probably about the 1960s through the 1990s or so.
Right.
So the pieces that you have decided to perform, or the ones that we're still talking about today that are in among classical music aficionados, I guess, from the 60s, 70s, and 80s, what is it about those pieces that you think has made them fall into some sort of, I guess, contemporary, I'm holding up my little air quote fingers now, contemporary classical canon type of thing? Because I think there is becoming almost a latter 20th century canon that's kind of coming out now.
True. Well, I, you know, this may not be scientific at all, but, you know, since we've been doing this for almost 25 years, I really think that the sort of the natural elimination process takes place and takes place a little bit quicker these days because of, you know, there's a lot more exposure for the music to be heard. You know, unlike in Beethoven's day, you know, if Beethoven wrote the Fifth Symphony and it was premiered, you know, you didn't hear it in Amsterdam or in London or, you know, the next day. You just didn't hear it. You know, you had to go to somewhere maybe months or years later it was played again. And historically, I don't know if that's true with the Beethoven 5, but in general, really, I mean, when something was performed, you know, that was the premiere, you heard reviews, you heard other people's reactions, but you didn't hear the piece. Now it's becoming so that, you know, you hear it on SoundCloud or YouTube or, you know, anywhere really, basically the next day. So I think what's happening is that the natural selection process is taking place, and certain pieces are basically surviving and enduring, I should say, and others not as much. And people are taking up the torch, I think, more and more of the, you know, the pieces that you're mentioning from the 60s, even 50s and 40s. You know, there's a lot of incredible pieces that now we're hearing more and more, you know, because people are playing it and it's available for us to hear it, not just sort of the dry music, you know, you sort of conceptualizing it in your head if you're not performing it. But we get to hear them. And I think that they're not only making a comeback, but they're also sort of claiming their spot as sort of the canon of the 20th century, you know. So that process is, I think, taking place on many fronts, whether it's the 21st century stuff that's just being written, or the stuff that we're calling old with the air quotation. They're just getting played more, and people are hearing, and people are realizing the value and taking up the torch and performing it more and more and more. And then all of a sudden, you know, they're out there. I think that's really what's taking place. And some of them, you know, some of the pieces, you know, we don't hear at all. And that doesn't mean they were bad pieces by any means. But for some reason, I mean, just like, you know, Beethoven versus his contemporaries, you know, some of the people didn't survive as much as, you know, Beethoven did or Mozart did, or, you know, even those guys were on the brink of basically not existing. I mean, if it wasn't for Mendelssohn, you know, we wouldn't have Bach today, basically. So, you know, things like that have happened in the past too, but, you know, there's that natural selection that happens. And one of the things that Sully is so proud to be a part of this is that that we're part of that process. You know, we basically present all these pieces. You know, we don't know what's going to sort of survive. We don't know what's going to become the next In C or, you know, any of those pieces that that comes from the 60s. We don't know, but we present it under the best light we possibly can and have people make up their own minds, basically.
Yeah. I think also
that, I don't know if I answered your question.
No. That was great. You know, I was just going to say also while you were talking, it made me reminded me that I think that some people want to, or some pieces are finding their way now because of relevance that to today's times
right.
that happen again. You know, I think of like music, like of George Crumb or something like that.
Absolutely.
And you know, and the influence of war on certain composers and how that has come around again.
Right. Very you know? Cyclical, actually. It's amazing. And then you realize, you know, it's such incredible pieces that we haven't heard in such a long time. I mean, when was the last time someone performed Black Angels in San Antonio or, for me, maybe Fort Worth, Dallas, you know, hasn't come around. And it was pretty popular about 20 years ago. I think it's probably going to make a comeback pretty soon.
Yeah. So there's a couple more little bonus pieces on the program that
right.
we can talk about here.
So, well, as I mentioned earlier, Soli does concerts outside of San Antonio, and we're proud to present the city and our heritage here in our 25 years, basically premiering 56 or so works for San Antonio audiences. You know, it's always been a first for them. But we do travel, and we are traveling after our concert on October 2nd and October 3rd. We're traveling to UT Dallas, and we'll be performing a program, same program there, on October 6th. And we wanted to add a couple of pieces for them, for, you know, concert length and all of that. And then we just looked at each other and said, why aren't we doing those things here? So We decided to add them on the program last minute. And one of the pieces is by John Williams, Air and Simple Gifts. Of course, you know, we performed that a couple of times, I think, now. We had not done it in Dallas yet. And we thought, you know, what better time to revive it, because we love the piece. And it's just kind of like a little anthem for Soli, because it was the first classical piece that was performed at a presidential inauguration ever, which is hard to believe, and because it was in 2008, for crying out loud. And it was performed by such incredible musicians like Yo-Yo Ma and Zach Perlman that, you know, it's sort of inherently found its place in the repertoire, I think. And we love performing it. We love opening the programs with it, because John Williams, as we know, very, you know, beautiful melodies, and of course he borrows the Shaker theme that Aaron Copland made famous, really. It's an old hymn, Simple Gifts. But it's a beautiful piece, and we're going to perform it there. And then we thought, yeah, gosh, we really need to perform that for our audiences too, and why not? And the other small piece that we have is a gorgeous lullaby for cello and piano by Robert Xavier Rodriguez, who's a really good friend of Soli's. We've had a long relationship with him, and Musica por un Tiempo was written for us, and we recorded it. It was on our first album, actually the title piece on our album. And so we're going to do Lulla Bear by Robert. And Robert is so whimsical. That's
an adorable title.
It is. It is. It is. And it's even more adorable when you know what it means too. Because it was originally written for double bass and orchestra, and it was premiered here in San Antonio by San Antonio Symphony, Gary Carr on bass, and Christopher Wilkins, our old music director, conducting. So later he adapted this movement for cello and piano, I should say. I'm sorry, Carolyn. And called it Lulla Bear. And it is the first winter of a bear cub's life. Oh, I mean, how much cuter can you get, you know? The complete piece is basically a first year of this baby bear's, you know, baby what is it, Bear Cub?
Bear Cub, yeah.
Bear Cub's life. And this moment specifically is like winter, you know, just learning to hibernate, basically. And it's like sort of this cold, beautiful environment. And, I mean, it is so beautiful. It's only 5 minutes long.
I think I'm going to melt with the description that you just gave me.
I know. And we wanted to honor Robert because Robert teaches at UT Dallas, actually. And we're going to see him. And we didn't have time to perform Musica un Por Tiempo. And so we decided, you know, we got to do something by Robert. And I contacted him. And I said, what do you want us to play? And he says, well, how about Lulla Bear? You know? And so, of course, everybody goes, oh, at the end. But anyway, so we included that on the program. It's like a little bonus thing, too.
Oh, that's fantastic. Great, great. Okay, so also happening in between, after y'all are in Dallas, but probably in between the next time we'll talk and from your concert after that, is you're going to do a one-shot in November at Jazz Texas. And us here, us folks here at Texas Public Radio are trying our best to help you out and source the public to come hang out and play.
That's right. It's going to be really fun. Yeah, so we're partnering on this, and that's fantastic, and Jazz Texas also. So TPR, Soli, and Jazz Texas, and with a great combination. We're going to have an open mic night at Jazz Texas, November 6th at 7:30, and this is going to be a contemporary music open mic. So we have a sign-up sheet already, like a little sort of jot form thing where you get to fill out what you're going to play. There are some parameters, so that's on our website. I think that could easily be found. And through those parameters, basically it has to be a contemporary classical piece written the past 100 years, which is a pretty wide range. I mean, we're basically bumping against Hindemiths and Shostakoviches, right?
Yeah.
So, but the fun thing is going to be, Soli's going to perform a couple of pieces in between some sets, but basically we want to hear you play your favorite contemporary piece. And there are, I don't know, thousands out there, and we know our audience is incredibly talented. So start dusting that old violin or the flute or guitar and just sign up and let us hear you.
All right. Thanks, Ertan.
Thank you.